welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome. I am Tom Garcia, your host for this next hour. This is the American Hour, and we're broadcasting live from Sao Paulo, Brazil. I'll come back to that in a moment. We're in the lovely Pullman Grand Hotel, deep in the heart of the city, and it was a pretty nice day today. It's gotten a little cloudy now. But we are down here in Brazil because I'm an airline pilot, and so I've been laying over here for the last couple of days. We broadcast yesterday live here from Sao Paulo, and we're doing it again today. I'll be flying a 767 back to Miami tonight, so I'll be broadcasting the next few days from Miami. Actually, not Miami, but where I live in South Florida. So if you're interested in calling in the show today, feel free. The number is 310-982-4145, and we're going to be talking about the Republicans' proposed budget today, a couple other issues, and anything that you call in about and want to talk about. But let me get to our upcoming show on Friday. This is a big show for us, and we expect to have a lot of people listening in. I hope you can listen in on that. It's going to be the same time on Friday as today, 4 p.m. in the afternoon. And our special guest is Franz Cabreau, the most influential conservative activist in Florida. And he's going to be on the show at 4 p.m. this Friday, 8 April. Some of the things we'll talk about are his book, What You Don't Know Has Hurt You, and it's called The Stolen History. He's the most sought-after conservative speaker in Florida. He's a former naval aviator like myself. He's an airline pilot. We'll also talk about Libya, what's been going on there. I think you probably saw in the news today that Gaddafi asked Obama to stop the airstrikes and wishes him luck in his next run for the presidency. What a nut job. We'll talk about the Constitution a little bit. We might delve into night carrier landings a little bit because that's always an interesting and scary thing to talk about. And, of course, again, his book, Stolen History. So don't miss that. Franz Cabreau this Friday. What other upcoming shows do we have? Next Monday, Paul Skousen. Now, I'm going to take a few moments here to talk about Paul, because this is going to be another big show. So on Monday, April 11th, Paul Skousen, and this is going to be a little later than normal. Instead of 4 p.m., the way we normally schedule it, it's going to be at 5 p.m. is when the show starts. So 5 p.m. on Monday, the 11th, Paul Skousen. Here's who he is. He was a former CIA intelligence officer and worked for President Reagan in the White House. He's a professional journalist and communications specialist. He's working on a book right now that's part of a series his father started. If you remember, the original book was The Naked Communist. And that I remember that book being in my dad's library back in when I was a little kid in the 60s. So he's working on the third book in the trilogy, which is called The Naked Socialist. And we're going to have him on the show to talk about that, how much of that was worked on by his father, if at all, previously. But you may know of Paul's father a little bit, especially if you're a conservative activist. His name is Cleon Skousen, and he wrote The 5,000-Year Leap. He was a close friend to President Reagan, and so that's another good reason to have Paul on. I love talking to Paul about his dad and the work that his dad did. So Monday, April 11th, Paul Skousen on at 5 p.m. Don't miss that. Then on Tuesday, we got Kelly Townsend, head of the Greater Tea Party, the Greater Phoenix Tea Party organization. And then on Thursday, Mark Ross. And if you heard the show yesterday, you heard me talk about this fantastic article that he wrote. We're going to kind of focus on his article that came out, a week or two ago, entitled What Exactly is a Conservative? And so he wrote a very nice article, and at the end of it, he comes to a conclusion that I think you'll like and a way of uniting conservatives in the to the right of the political spectrum. All right, what else do we have? On Monday, the 18th, Nick Texiro, for normal time, 4 o'clock on that Monday, and he's got a website called Duh Progressive. Hilarious. And then the 22nd of April on Friday, don't miss Winston Scott, former astronaut, retired Navy captain, and he's currently the dean of aeronautics at Florida Institute Tech. We'll have him on the show to talk about NASA. Where is it right now? Where is it going? Where should it be going? And what are his thoughts on NASA and its prospects for the future? All right, so there we have it. Upcoming shows. good stuff coming up. And today in the news, in the last few days, we've been looking at the GOP's proposal for cutting the budget. So if any of you have looked at that and have any thoughts on it, please feel free to call in. We can talk about it. But I'm going to go through some of the highlights of this. Now, I talked about it yesterday. They're planning on cutting spending $6.2 trillion over the next 10 years. And as I said yesterday, $6.2 trillion in spending is not debt. We're cutting spending, not cutting debt. Now, I realize we're cutting potential debt if we didn't do anything different. But our debt's going to keep going up. It's just not going to go up as fast. So I'm a little disappointed there. I'm sure they would tell us that you can't cut that much, Tom. You just can't cut that quickly. I disagree. I think we could cut quite a bit deeper. In fact, there's a poll on my Facebook page, if you'd like to go take a look at that, a survey asking you, do you think the GOP has cut enough? So go to the American Hour Radio Show on Facebook, and over to the left, in the left column, you'll see the survey. It says, has the Republicans cut enough? And we'll give you the results of that next week after enough people have taken that poll, but please go take a look at that. All right, the next thing when it comes to spending, they're eliminating hundreds of duplicative programs. And I wonder why. Why is it we have all these programs to begin with, and how long have they been around, and why didn't somebody do something about it 2 years ago, 4 years ago, 6 years ago? But in any case, they're going to eliminate duplicative programs and bring non-security discretionary spending below 2008 levels. Well, that's good. But there's a lot more spending that's not mandatory, non-mandatory spending, in that half of the or third of the budget. When we talk about discretionary, sometimes people lump the non-mandatory in there. But what they're doing in this case is they're not. What's non-mandatory? Well, pork that's involved in defense spending, et cetera. There may be pork and earmarks and other things that are in the budget that are non-mandatory. For Homeland Security and other things. There's a lot of waste there. So they're saying they're not going to touch any non-security discretionary spending or non-mandatory spending. But those things need to be looked at very closely because there is a lot of waste there. I wrote an op-ed in the Orlando for the Orlando Sentinel back, I believe, in June of 2010, talking about the F-35 alternate engine, saying that that was a waste of money, especially in light of our economic difficulties right now. Well, Congress decided to fund it anyways because it supposedly was going to create jobs in the U.S. and it was good for going to be good for our economy. It's good for some of the legislators that have constituents that may work for General Electric, et cetera. The problem was that the engine was going to be built not necessarily by GE, but their subsidiary, Rolls-Royce, over in the U.K. So that's where the jobs were all going to be created. But they appropriated the money, $650 million anyway, and now it's been cut. From further any further appropriations. So that's good, but for some reason nobody listened to me back then. I can't figure that out. In any case, that's discretionary or non-mandatory defense spending right there. Pork that's supposedly going to help constituents. We've got to get rid of that stuff as well. All right, when it comes to the debt, let me back up spending still. Brings government spending to below 20% of the economy, and this is important. A sharp contrast, as they say in the document here for the proposal, a sharp contrast to the president's budget, in which spending never falls below 23% of GDP over the next decade. So that's good. We're going to get it below 20%. That's a good stabilizing force for the economy and for businesses, and that's very helpful. We need to get it lower than that, but that's definitely better than being above 20%. How about debt and deficits? Well, it's going to reduce deficits by $4.4 trillion compared to the president's budget. Well, that's not hard. Look, he just spent, I don't want to say he, but under his presidency, we've spent $4.4 trillion in the last 3 years. I mean, this is crazy, $4.4 trillion in 3 years. I don't know, what. So we're basically eliminating all the excess spending that he has been pumping, been involved in and behind in the last 3 years. Now, how much did, what was our deficit spending under George Bush for 8 years? It was $3.2 trillion. So, yeah, that definitely is something that had to be done. What about the president's benchmark on sustainability? Well, his benchmark was pretty low, and his own budget fails to meet it. And have a balanced budget by 2015. So apparently the GOP is on track to do that. And it puts the budget on a path to balance and pay off the debt. Now, this is what I said yesterday, and I hadn't read this document as of yesterday, but I said, what the GOP is doing is we're putting ourselves, I'm going to use their term words now, on a path to reduce debt, a path to reduce deficits, future deficits each year. But it won't do it until after 2010. So what we're doing is we're slipping off a cliff of debt, and we're slowing that sliding for the next 10 years. But after that, then we'll really actually start cutting the debt and on. So what they're saying is we're so addicted to this debt and spending money that we can't, like an addict, just stop it overnight. We need to just slowly work our way into it. Wow. How many of them will still be around after 10 years from now? Some of them will. Many of them will. But the ones that are really pushing this in the leadership probably won't, in my guess. And they won't have to account for what goes on after that. They can just say, hey, we've got things going the right direction. That's my take on this proposal, and I think it's a timid proposal. All right, how about taxes? Keep taxes low so the economy can grow. It's going to eliminate roughly $800 billion in tax increases imposed by the president's health care law. That's great. It's not going to fund anything in Obamacare, and it's going to reduce all of those taxes that were involved in it, primarily for businesses. Remember the law, businesses spend over a certain amount of money, and then they have to file an IRS report, on and on and on. All of that paperwork, all of the extra IRS auditors who are going to have to be involved in managing that, that had nothing to do with healthcare. That was just more about control. So that's going to be helpful. It prevents $1.5 trillion tax increase that's called for in the president's budget. He wants to raise our taxes. All right, continuing on. Let's see what other things they got here that are maybe of interest. Now, get this. They do talk about jobs. And I think a lot of people were really concerned about the economy and jobs before this last election in 2010. Of course, I think a lot of people are very, very concerned about the debt. Republican Party really hasn't addressed job creation at this point. So finally, they're going to talk a little bit about it here, but I have a feeling it's going to be in somewhat general terms. Let's see. Create nearly 1 million new private sector jobs next year and result in 2.5 million additional private sector jobs in the last year of the decade. So these are their projections based on the action they're taking to reduce the debt. Well, quite honestly, it sounds like the current administration making projections based on, nothing that's real tangible. Yes, if we're going to be reducing the debt and keeping money in the private sector, I don't know how you put that into numbers to translate into creating jobs, but they've apparently done it. So we could see those numbers not be real accurate, sort of like the Republican Party saying they would cut $100 billion in the continuing resolution proposal, which they didn't. They weren't able to do that. So we'll see if these numbers end up holding up. They claim that it's going to spur economic growth. I would agree with that. And real GDP. I would agree with that. Key objectives. They talk about their key objectives and key components. Prioritizing national security. They're going to save $178 billion. And they're going to reinvest $100 billion into higher military priorities. Well, that's a good idea because I know there's, like I said, there's some pork there. Streamline other government agencies, good. Ending corporate welfare, and they mentioned Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. They're going to end the taxpayer bailouts to those institutions and other potential future institutions. And boosting American energy resources. We're going to remove barriers to safe, responsible energy exploration. Now, remember when the president last week said that he was very energy, pro-energy president, and we've given out 29 new leases to companies to explore for oil. Well, that's exactly what they were, leases to explore for oil. Not permits to drill for oil, but leases to explore. But he said 29 new leases have gone out across the country. Well, that's great. How long is it going to take for them to explore and determine if there is even any oil there? And then how long is it going to take for them to get the permits? We've got all kinds of leases across the country, as the president said, not producing any oil because his administration won't issue any permits. That's why. So these new 29 leases he's given out, is he going to actually give any permits to drill beyond that? My guess would be no. He's just using that as a diversion. All right. Now, we know that the GOP proposal is talking about reforming Medicare and Social Security. And let's see what they have to say about it in this proposal. They say they're going to save Medicare and protect those in and near retirement from any disruptions and offer future beneficiaries the same kind of health care options now enjoyed by members of Congress. Well, what they're saying there is they're going to privatize Medicare. They're not going to go with probably the same plan that the members of Congress have. They're just going to go to a private industry and say, you know, what can we buy in bulk, a Medicare-type program, and purchase that for people that reach the age of Medicare. All right, now what are we going to do about Social Security? Well, this bill forces action by the president and both members of Congress to ensure the solvency of this critical program. Forces them. Well, how does it force them? I'm going to have to dig into that later tonight, and we'll talk about that tomorrow. What are they going to do to solve Social Security? Now, I do know that in the 70s, early 70s, Chile essentially imploded their Social Security system, and they had to do something. They were absolutely forced to because it just went insolvent. Within 3 years, they were able to get 98% of their people into some form of a private system. So 3% of their people had to stay on the existing system. But can you imagine if in 3 years we could even just reduce the amount of dependency on the Social Security system via the government by 50%? 50% in 3 years. My gosh, the burden that would be lifted off of our government would be huge. It'd be something like around $250 billion a year. So, and we know that we're barely covering it right now, and in the future, if we don't do something, then we won't even have the funds coming in under the current system to cover it on an annual basis. So, and we also know that the government doesn't actually use the money that you and I pay into Social Security to pay anybody. They use it for other things and just keep writing IOUs for Social Security. So that's one of the reasons we keep going into debt. So it'll be interesting to see what they propose for the gradual privatization of Social Security. But we do know that people on the left love to scare everybody about how the Republican Party is going to eliminate Medicare and eliminate Social Security, so seniors are screwed. It's not what's going to happen. But we do know that when the liberals are in power, absolutely nothing to protect seniors against the demise and implosion of these programs. They just keep going along, further and further into debt, and it doesn't work. So we've got to do something, and I think most people do. A couple days ago, we had a nice young man call in who said the very thing. You know, he's a young guy. He's got a long future to go ahead of him. He was 23 years old, calling from Columbus, Ohio, and he said, we got to work together to solve these problems. And privatization of Social Security and Medicare was not a problem or an issue for him. He wants to see something done so that it's there when he gets to that age, because he knows, he's smart enough to know, that if something isn't done now, those programs will just be gone. There's no way to salvage them if we wait too long. So that's the report from the GOP. We'll dig more in depth into it tomorrow and see what some of the details are, because that's really kind of an executive overview of it. But the details are probably going to give us some ideas to whether some of the stuff is going to work or not. Why don't we take a commercial break now, and when we come back, we'll jump onto some other topics, and we'll be right back.
National Veterans Homeless Support, or NVHS, was formed by veterans for the sole purpose of locating and assisting the more than 4,500 homeless veterans living in the parks, forests, and streets of Central Florida. Their mission is clearly defined: to eliminate homelessness among veterans in Central Florida, and they work very hard to accomplish this mission. They offer a very unique service to the community in that they are the only organization that goes out into the field searching for the veterans, providing supplies where they find them, and working with other organizations to get them out of the woods and back into society. If you go to their website, it's located at nvhs.us, and you can also find them on Facebook. Their Veterans Resources link on their webpage is worth its weight in gold, so please go check out the website, and if you're able, make a donation. They do a very, very valuable service to the veterans of Central Florida, and we'd like to expand this and see it expand to the rest of the country.
You're listening to The American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.
All right, we're back now. I like quotes, and I'm going to give you a quote here from Thomas Jefferson. But Thomas Jefferson answered a question for me when I read this as to what destroys liberty and the rights of man in every government which has ever existed under the sun. And that's what he said, just like that. His answer was, the generalizing and concentrating all cares and power into one body. And that's where we're going today. We're moving down the road of concentrating the cares and powers of the nation into the hands of what? The federal government. Now, the federal government wasn't designed to handle this stuff, ever. It was designed to do some very specific things. So let's see what James Madison had to say about the role of the federal government. The powers delegated by the proposed Constitution to the federal government are few and defined. They will be principally exercised on external objects, war, peace, negotiation, foreign commerce. That's it. So who's going to handle all the social issues? Well, as he says in this very statement, that it's the states, and he refers to it in this way. In the ordinary course of affairs concerning the lives and liberties and properties of the people and the internal order and improvement and prosperity of the state, those are the powers that are reserved to the states. So we've gotten kind of upside down on this, and a lot of liberals like that because they say, well, Tom, it's too late. We can't go back the other way. Or, Tom, what if the states just aren't doing their job? Well, that's kind of the way the ball, you know, bounces. If they're not doing their job, there's nothing in the Constitution that says the federal government can pick up the slack. It's not there. It's not an enumerated power. Yeah, but they need to do it. Well, this is the problem we keep running into here these days, is when we allow the federal government to act in ways that may seem beneficial to us but is not within an enumerated power, then we're giving the government way too much power, and we're stealing more from the states, and it's just going to be an endless sliding and erosion of our Constitution that we will, one day reach that point where we just can't turn it around. But that day has not come yet. That day has not come. And so if we're going to turn things around, we need to heed the advice of Alexander Hamilton, who was a Federalist. He liked this federal government. He liked bigger government. But he did say this in the Federalist Papers prior to the ratification of the Constitution. I'm going to paraphrase it. I think I read this quote within the last few days. But he said, it's very clear in the Constitution that the enumerated powers given to Congress are not general legislative authority. And what do we mean by general legislative authority? It's not the kind of authority they have to where they can just do what my liberal friends would suggest. Well, somebody's got to do it if the states won't do it. No, it's not general. It's very specific. What the Constitution says is what they can do and nothing more. And it's also not to be interpreted. In other words, the enumerated powers are not to be generalized. They are exactly what they say. And I'll give you some examples here in a few minutes. And then he goes on to say that it would be absurd as well as useless if general authority had been intended in the Constitution. So let's take a look at an example of some general legislative authority. I happen to be a member of a union because I'm an airline pilot and a major carrier. And the FAA, is a department that regulates the airline and how it operates. Well, in an upcoming FAA bill, Congressman Micah from Florida put an attachment in there that changes the way unions can be formed. In other words, let's take an airline that might not have a union, or a railway organization, a train company. So it applies to that because they both fall under the Railway Labor Act. Even though I don't go along on rails, airlines fall under the Railway Labor Act. And it's not a huge change, but it is a change to how we can determine if we want to be a union. Now, how is it that the federal government has the authority to make that decision? Well, under the Railway Labor Act, they get to control. Now, why is it the Railway Labor Act? Well, originally it was designed to protect the country from significant economic issues if the few trains or few airlines that existed just all went on strike. Nobody could get around, and it was considered a national security issue. Well, that doesn't exist today. But even beyond that, so still, why does the government have the authority? Well, it really comes back to the Commerce Clause. So here's what we're doing today in today's age. We're saying that because I'm an airline pilot and work for a company that provides interstate commerce, now the federal government can control my decision to even form a union. Well, let's analyze the Commerce Clause for a moment. What is commerce? Commerce is, and interstate commerce for that matter, is the trade or sale or purchase of goods and services across state lines. If I make a decision to form a union because my employee group doesn't have a union at a particular airline, is that commerce? It's not commerce at all. So what we're doing is we're saying commerce is a transaction, and the federal government has the authority under the Commerce Clause to regulate transactions. But what we've done in modern history is we're saying if my decision affects that transaction, in other words, it either makes it occur or it doesn't occur, now that we can control also. And you know that we recently had a federal circuit judge in Washington, D.C. rule that the federal government has the authority to control your mind, control your thoughts. And essentially what she said in her ruling was, when you make a decision not to purchase health care, you've made a decision, and it affects commerce. Therefore, the federal government can control your ability to make decisions. Wow. You know, let's go back to Alexander Hamilton. We're not supposed to be generalizing these enumerations in the Constitution. How many of you think that saying that I somehow affect commerce when I make a decision to unionize means now the federal government can control the process of unionizing in a private company? Absolutely not. Because if we're allowed to do that, and we have done it, so we're absolutely doing it, let's think of the kind of things that affect commerce that you do in your everyday lives. Why, that would be almost everything. For example, when you go to church on Sundays, you're not out shopping, you're not out purchasing, you're not out on the internet buying anything, you're not selling anything, you're not working for your employer. You have affected interstate commerce by withholding your services. You're not engaged in a transaction. Therefore, I think the federal government ought to be able to regulate your church-going activities. Does that make sense? Of course not. But this is how they're using the law. They're saying that anything that affects that transaction, but take a look at the Constitution again. It doesn't say transaction. It doesn't say anything that might affect interstate commerce, anything connected to interstate commerce. It says simply commerce. That's a transaction, and that's what the federal government gets to regulate, not everything else attached to it. So there are some things that I believe we need to clarify in the Constitution, and really the only way to do that is with a constitutional amendment. Now, I would never call for a constitutional Congress, very, very dangerous, but the Congress can propose an amendment, and if it passes in the House and the Senate and the President signs it, then the states can decide if they want to ratify it. And if we have 33 states that vote to ratify it, it now becomes an amendment. So I think there are a few areas that we probably need to go down the road on this. One is the Commerce Clause. We need to simply define the Commerce Clause. And I saw a proposal the other day from somebody that looked pretty good. It doesn't change the Commerce Clause. It just clarifies the Commerce Clause that it's to be used for transactions, the actual transactions, and that's not the word they use, that's the word I use, and not for the manufacturing and production and training and everything else that goes in to those goods and services. Those are not transactions. They're what they are. So they're not commerce. So I think that's a good idea. There are a few other things that we need to look at in the Constitution. We'll go into that on another day about what kind of things in the Constitution we need to clarify. And in some cases, we may be able to do it just with legislation. But legislation isn't going to be a long-term fix because all it takes is a legislature to come along and say, you know what, we're going to write another piece of legislation that basically undoes that piece of legislation. So you really need a constitutional amendment. And what's one of the most classic examples of the constitutional amendment? Well, it would be to undo the Dred Scott ruling of the Supreme Court, the activist Supreme Court in the 1800s that ruled that blacks were never intended to have citizenship, therefore they can't. Well, now what do you do when the Supreme Court has ruled something like that? Well, there's a good reason for term limits on Supreme Court justices, and that is something that we need to do. Not only term limits with them, but term limits for Congress and the Senate. We already have them on the president. So there's another constitutional amendment. But I think we really, I know for a fact, we really need to get into term limits. I'll talk to anybody that wants to talk about term limits. But the bottom line is this. Yes, I can get rid of my congressman and senator by participating in the process and voting for somebody else. But I can't get rid of the congressmen and senators from other states that I have no effect on. I can have an effect, but as an average citizen, no, I'm not going to be able to have an effect on other states. So how do I get rid of Nancy Pelosi and Barney Frank? I can't. I've got to rely on the citizens there to do it. They don't have any intention of doing that, and I believe that just harms the country. So term limits would be very useful and would have been useful back then. It wouldn't have certainly stopped the Dred Scott ruling, but it would have gotten rid of those activist judges. So how did we overcome that? Well, a constitutional amendment that essentially says that anybody born in the United States of America, and you're familiar with this, anybody born in the United States of America under the jurisdiction of the United States of America is a citizen of the United States of America. And that amendment, there was a whole purpose of the amendment for establishing birth record. It's the 14th Amendment. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States. That's exactly what it says. So if you're not familiar with the history of this amendment, the purpose was to undo the Dred Scott ruling of blacks not being able to have citizenship. So there's one reason that we need constitutional amendments or add amendments to the Constitution is because we've gotten rulings over the years from the Supreme Court that are unrealistic, that twist the Constitution, that really are not in line with the Constitution, and that I believe are unconstitutional, and most people would agree. So there's a little bit of discussion on the Constitution and where we are today with sneaking around it and generalizing some of the enumerated powers. Now let's talk about the president for a moment. Here's an interesting concept about his power. We know that the president can issue executive orders, right? And who do those executive orders go to? Is an executive order telling the country what it has to do? Or no, really it's just the departments within his branch, the executive branch. So that would be like the Department of Energy and the EPA and on and on. His executive orders can't affect anybody but the executive branch. But on the other hand, is he allowed to give executive orders? I mean, really, everybody would think, well, he's the executive. He ought to be able to issue executive orders. But the Constitution doesn't say he can't. Now, it would be intuitive, Tom, that he can issue executive orders. And I would agree with that, except would it be intuitive that the president could ask questions of the principal officer in each of the executive departments? Would that be intuitive? I'd say absolutely. I mean, first of all, if you were going to ever say there's something he couldn't do because it's not in the Constitution, well, then it might be issuing an executive order. But asking a question, my goodness, Tom, he's got to be able to ask questions. Well, guess what? He is able to ask questions. In Article 2, Section 1, it says that the president may require the opinion in writing of the principal officer in each of the executive departments upon any subject relating to the duties of their respective offices. So if it's so intuitive that he can issue executive orders, why is it that the Constitution specifies he can ask a question? I say if it's specifying that he can ask a question, then by not specifying he can issue orders, he can't do it. And we go back to, Alexander Hamilton. Can't generalize these enumerations of power. And that's an enumeration of power that he can ask for an opinion in writing. So maybe it's unrealistic to say that the president can't issue executive orders. But by executive order, we have so many of these departments that have such broad-reaching regulatory authority that with him issuing an order, he's really legislating from the White House through regulation. And that may be one of the reasons why it doesn't specify that he can issue executive orders to these regulatory agencies. And frankly, I don't think our founders envisioned regulatory agencies on the level of the executive branch. In fact, if they could join us today, I think they would tell us, get rid of all that mess. There are a few things we probably could use and need, but not that much, my goodness. So let's take one more break, and when we come back, we'll talk about maybe some of the headlines today, things that are going on today, and so we'll be right back. Stay with us. This is the American Hour on the USA Talk Radio Network. You can reach us by dialing into 310-982-4145. We'll be right back. National Veterans Homeless Support, or NVHS, was formed by veterans for the sole purpose of locating and assisting the more than 4,500 homeless veterans living in the parks, forests, and streets of Central Florida. Their mission is clearly defined, to eliminate homelessness among veterans in Central Florida, and they work very hard to accomplish this mission. They offer a very unique service to the community in that they are the only organization that goes out into the field searching for the veterans, providing supplies where they find them, and working with other organizations to get them out of the woods and back into society. If you go to their website, it's located at nvhs.us, and you can also find them on Facebook. Their Veterans Resources link on their webpage is worth its weight in gold, so please go check out the website, and if you're able, make a donation. They do a very, very valuable service to the veterans of Central Florida, and we'd like to expand this and see it expand to the rest of the country.
You're listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.
All right, we're back. You just heard an advertisement there for the NVHS. I urge you to go take a look at that, see what they're up to. They've really grown as an organization the last few years. I've been involved with them for several years now and helping them on various projects. They do great work helping out homeless veterans in Central Florida. And I envision that the way they do this and the programs that they have created within their organization is something that can expand across the country. And I would like to see that happen in other areas of the country where we have high concentrations of veterans. So go take a look at the page. It's nvhs.us. And they are also on Facebook. If you look for National Veterans Homeless Support on Facebook, you can find them there as well. Now, as far as American Hour's site on Facebook, you can just search for the American Hour Radio Show. We've got a new survey on there today asking if you think the Republicans have cut enough. So please go take the survey, and we'll put the results out next week after we've had enough people vote on that. There's an old survey on there also. You can take a look at that if you want to. And the vast 99% of the people agreed that the president has overstepped his bounds and authority. For the website, usatalkradionetwork.com. We've got other great hosts there that will have shows coming up in the future. Check back there frequently to see who's on, who's coming up, and that kind of thing. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I've got about 2,500 followers right now. I put stuff out almost every day, and I retweet some of the best of the tweets that I follow, and there's some pretty good people that I follow. I mean, very, very talented people, smart people. So look for the American Hour on Twitter, and you can follow me there for the latest and greatest and breaking news. Now let's talk about the government shutdown. We talked a little bit about it yesterday. I got to experience a shutdown in the 80s when Reagan just wouldn't sign the bill that, or veto the bill that the for the next year's proposal that the Democrat Congress had given him. And I've heard on a lot of shows that, oh, it won't affect the military, it won't affect the military. Well, no, they'll keep operating. But I didn't get paid that month. I didn't get paid until the next payday. So it was, you know, not the end of the world, but it did affect me in a way. So for those of you that have heard on other shows that, no, it doesn't affect them anyway, well, it does. Unless there's some specific provision passed to continue the pay, regardless of the shutdown, for the military. Which brings up an interesting inside scoop here. I don't know if you've seen it in the media or not. I was Twittering this out last night, and I believe I put it on my Facebook page as well, that Representative Boehner, Speaker Boehner, has an ace up his sleeve here, and I don't know if it's really an ace, but we'll call it that. It's a bit of a trick, and I called it pulling the rug out from under the Democrats. We'll see if he actually uses this or not. But to propose and pass, and they would be able to pass it in the House, no doubt, a one-week continuing resolution. Now, before you get all upset at me for, oh, Tom, no, a one-week resolution, we've had enough of these continuing resolutions. It's true. I'm fed up with the continuing resolutions, but there's a little key to this continuing resolution. Number one, it's going to cut $12 billion from existing spending, so there are additional cuts in there, so that's always good. It will fund the government for an additional week, but what it does is it then also funds the military for the rest of the fiscal year. And you know that the Democrats and liberals have been just gearing up for a shutdown so that they can blame the Republicans and use the military as hostages and other organizations. But primarily, they'd love to have the military as hostages, although they'll keep operating. They'll say, oh, these poor military service members who put their lives on the line, they're not going to get paid on Friday, and on and on and on. Well, guess what? They won't have the military to use as a hostage. They will use all the other agencies that they closed down. Of course, nothing of serious importance, significance, in my opinion, will be shut down. Border Patrol will continue to operate, the FBI, the CIA, all things that protect us and that we need will continue to operate. But it's the $1.3 trillion worth of federal agencies that we pay for every year, many of which we don't even know what they do. And what they do, if you go look them up, whether it be the Department of Interior, Department of Agency, you're going to look and see, wow, this stuff is a waste of time. There's no return on investment on these agencies. And so if those agencies shut down for a few days or even a week, boy, we're going to really miss a lot. And so, you know, the question comes up, well, what if nobody really does care about the government shutting down? Is that possible? Is it possible that we as Americans maybe don't care so much about that? You know, I don't want it to shut down. I always think it's a bad thing for the government to shut down. But we've got to get the Democrats on board with cutting more. I don't think the Republicans have cut enough themselves. But there was an article today written by Christy Stone Hamrick, which said, what if the government shut down? What if the government shut down and no one cared? And she says, everybody keeps talking about the possible shutdown on Friday. And the president and the Republicans and Democrats are squabbling and trying to work something out, et cetera, et cetera. But would having less government be such a bad thing? Are teachers going to send home less, and this is what she said, are teachers going to send home less busy homework for parents so that the evening hours would be spent on family time rather than shanghaied by the government-run school systems that you already had your children in for 8 hours? You know, would people drive to the grocery store unharassed by speed traps from the state troopers, et cetera? Well, she puts that in there, but they're not paid by the federal government. They're paid by the state. So, no, the police, the local and state police and law enforcement, that they're not going to be affected. Anyway, would forests be saved as politicians were unable to put out self-aggrandizing statements about their views on the environment? Could we quietly enjoy hamburger without the haranguing of the self-appointed food czars who comment on weight with all the viciousness of a cheerleader in high school? With full funding, does anyone believe that highway departments will diligently fill potholes efficiently and speedily, or that the miles of orange cones that clog the nation's highways will actually involve work? So it's a good article, and I think, quite frankly, the majority of us won't notice a government shutdown. And a government shutdown means we're not spending money on the government. Not a bad thing. I'm opposed to it if we can stop it, and I think it's really the Democrats that are dragging their feet. And here's the sad part. They're dragging their feet for political reasons, not because they truly believe that we don't need to cut the government. They want to make the Republicans look bad, and this is about the only way they can do it. And in reality, I don't think it makes Republicans look bad at all. It makes the Republicans look like they're sticking to their guns, and they intend to cut deficit spending and the budget for next year and our overall debt. So, not too bad a thing if we can stick to this and pressure the Democrats. So I think Boehner's little trick might work, and I think in reality will make the Democrats not look so good. Well, we're coming up a quarter to the hour. Nobody's called in today. That's fine because I actually have to get ready to head on out of here and fly back to Miami. So I'm going to cut the show a little bit short today. I hope you've enjoyed it. We're going to start getting guests on as of Friday. The broadcasts that we've been doing this week are just kind of preliminary. Get used to using this system. Broadcasts, we've had some fun. We've had quite a few listeners and a few callers in over the last few days. But the Big Bang Show is going to be on Friday, and that's with Franz Cabreau, the most influential conservative and conservative activist in Florida. Don't miss that show. It's going to be a great show. He's always fun to speak with, very, very smart, and we'll talk to him a little bit about his book, Stolen History. You'll like what he has to say about that. He's always a jaw-dropping presenter. Every presentation I've been to where he's given that presentation on stolen history, the people are mesmerized. It doesn't matter whether it's his one-hour presentation or his three-hour presentation. Nobody gets up and leaves. Everybody sticks around to hear the whole thing, and they're mesmerized through the whole presentation. So you really don't want to miss that. And then again on Monday, Paul Skousen, son of the author of The 5,000-Year Leap, and we'll be giving a couple of those books away on the air on Monday, so don't miss that show. Call in. If you're a caller in, you got a shot at getting one of the copies, and I'm going to give probably a couple of those away, and with each copy, I also give some pocket constitutions away, so don't miss that show on Tuesday. All right, everybody, thanks for tuning in. It's been a pleasure. We will see you again tomorrow. We'll talk about current events tomorrow, and then the big show on Friday. Don't miss that with Franz Cabreau, most influential conservative in Central Florida. Take care.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
You're listening to another top-rated show on the USA